Hello, everybody. This is Richard Beatty with Crawford Media Denver. This is a special public affairs program on the mental health crisis, counseling culture. Crawford Media is partnering with Colorado Community Church, which also partners with many Christian mental health professionals who offer counseling in different areas of expertise. These counselors have been screened and vetted by the church and offer therapy from a biblical worldview. Our topic today is from Rachel's Vineyard, and it is how to counsel men after abortion. For a full list of counselors, go to coloradocommunity.org/mental health. That's coloradocommunity.org/mental health. Now, here's Rita Schulte.
What about men? I mean, when you were talking about the siblings that come to the retreats, I love that because for a suicide loss survivor, you know, we call siblings kind of the forgotten mourners.
Yeah.
Because, you know, here's mom and dad, and they are oftentimes, and I think, you know, men have been too along the way. Typically, they didn't want the child to be aborted. They're powerless to stop the woman from having an abortion. And then the other side of that, obviously, they're pushing her toward an abortion. What issues do you see with men on these retreats?
I think that women are shocked that men cry as hard as they do. Mm. They can't believe it. And I think some of the men are surprised, too, because the way this program unfolds so much with the body and the rituals, it just bypasses sort of the intellect that might happen in a discussion or a study group. Because we're really working with the grief. And but it's very healing for the women to see men cry because they think they don't give a hoot.
Yeah.
And they have tons of rage toward a lot of men afterwards. And of course, many of the women have had multiple abortions. So there might be many partners and many betrayals. But to see a man cry is very healing. And that's what I think is surprised everyone about men's grief. And of course, there's different ways that men grieve that's different than women. Like men want to have sex when they're grieving. Women don't want it, right? So that would
men want to work and women want to talk. You know, men want to bury it. They stuff their emotions oftentimes.
But just the way everyone comes together, and I feel like God ordains every group because there's a healing that each person plays in another one's process on those weeks, because they'll say something, they'll remind them of something, they'll express an emotion. We also use the group for therapeutic means. So whether you're dealing with anger at a man or an abortionist, we're able to act all that out, like in psychodrama. It's like if somebody's stuck somewhere, there's always someone who can play their father or their mother or their husband or their boyfriend that forced them years ago and never called once. And as soon as it was over, broke up. So it's like you don't stir it up and not have a place to put it, because we just work through whatever it is.
Whatever comes up. What effects do you see on relationships? You've said, and I quote, most relationships end at some point after the abortion. Some continue with the dysfunctional dynamics between the couple that can serve as an unconscious way to self-punish, and even in certain sense, as a memorial of the aborted child. Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think it's just acting out what you're not able to do, or the passive aggressive behaviors. So it gets so toxic. Relationships get so toxic and so triggering, right? And that's all in the body too. That's why a lot of relationships don't last. So whatever we can do to restore, we recommend that you come with your current partner if you want to come with someone, not go look up an ex. So if you're married, and then that father or mother would spiritually adopt the aborted child or children.
What about struggles that men might face being married to a post-abortive woman?
Well, a lot of those men accompany them. That's what I was just saying. And they mm-hmm. spiritually adopt the child. They accompany them because being alone at the time of the crisis is most people's trauma, feeling abandoned. So in a healing and a reparative way, if the husband's willing, and we have a lot of couple-led ministries where that's exactly what happened and they help in the ministry. a lot of men say it gave me my wife back, because there is a problem with sex sometimes.
Right.
There can be a fear of pregnancy. We work with a lot of men who were grieving because they were ready to start a family, and the wife was so ambivalent because she hadn't healed from her losses.
I can imagine some of the feelings that men would have would be isolation, loneliness themselves. You know, they carry their own guilt and shame on a lot of levels.
For men that were involved in the decision. Yes. Yes. And they also grieve with their living children. Like, their living children can become triggers to what they lost. Mm. And it's very painful, especially if it's a secret. I feel like whenever there's these secrets in relationship, it can be very destructive, because you think, what am I doing wrong? Why is she suddenly cold? Why doesn't she want sex? Why does he, you know, go in the kids' room at night and cry on their bed? You know?
Yeah. And men tend to, you know, emotionally withdraw and shut down.
Some do, and some act
some out. Get angry, yeah, or act out, or start drinking, or porn. Yep. Excuse me.
Like the addictive behaviors that allow you to dissociate from whatever painful feelings you have.
Right.
Well, you know what? I think that this is a really important question. I wish my husband was on, because he does men and abortion. He's a clinical social worker. He works very specifically with them and writes a lot about that. But I think that men are providers and protectors of the family. And when that is violated, that there's an ambivalence, and the same with women, an ambivalence about kids. And so if they haven't grieved that loss, then they bring that ambivalence into the relationship. And I think that it's also a problem because men are expected to be totally standoff. It's your body, it's your choice. But as soon as a baby's born, we don't want you to be a deadbeat dad. And that there's two messages of it's her deal. And then when the baby comes, suddenly be attached. Right. And when he wasn't allowed to be part of that decision, or there's another issue that's very common, is that a lot of men are ambivalent about fatherhood when they've had a really tumultuous relationship with their own dad, or they've been fatherless. They feel anxiety about taking on that role. And abortion seems a way to just be able to, I can't deal with that, because it brings those issues up when you know you're going to be a father and it was never modeled to you. The same can go with women when they hate their mothers. How do you not like your mother? You don't get married. I mean, you don't become a mother.
Well, it comes up. I was just having a conversation with somebody yesterday about it. The very exact thing, pregnant. And now, you know, I'm going to be a mother. And then all the traumatic loss from
everything comes up
is resurfaces.
We really go to great lengths in our ministry in pre-marriage programs, pre-cana, I don't know what everybody calls them, but mm-hmm. It's where you're going to get married. We do all sorts of publicity in the same way that you would in any premarital program, talk about finances, talk about addiction, talk about if there is an abortion in your past, it is going to impact the sexual intimacy. Some women cannot get aroused afterwards. Another guy that we knew couldn't consummate the marriage after they had had sex, they had an abortion, but that act of sexual intercourse was so closely tied and aligned to a death experience that devastated his girlfriend, and he married her, but she was devastated, ready to try again to have a baby, and he couldn't have an erection.
Wow.
So, you know, and that's a psychological thing, because it had become linked with that experience and all of
course.
Her grief, and he felt terribly guilty about it. But the more couples who can be encouraged to, during the engagement process itself, before there's kids, come and do a healing like that, whether you're the partner or not, to be present with your spouse as they do the grieving, because that grieving, when she is triggered, if you went through a retreat or something like that with them, you'll be able to have a context to talk about the triggers as life goes on. As
sure.
Your sister has a baby and now you don't want to be godmother because
it brings up too much pain. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So I know we're getting near the end here, but I wanted you to talk a little bit about this has been, you know, your baby. This has been the first, you know, curriculums and books that you've written, but you also have other ministries that you are now engaged in and you've written curriculums for.
The second program that I made is called Grief to Grace, Reclaiming the Gift of Human Dignity. And this is a program that's designed for abuse and neglect, all kinds of abuse, childhood sexual abuse, adult rapes, domestic violence, physical, emotional, spiritual abuse. We deal with clergy abuse in the church.
Wow.
And everyone comes together, men and women, for a 5-day, it's a whole week boot camp. It's in a retreat setting and it's therapeutically facilitated, a lot of somatic work and living scripture exercises that are very much geared toward bringing issues forward. We have a whole day for anger work. We have a whole day but the heart of it is really, the heart of that retreat is really going through the Paschal mystery, the passion, the whipping, the scourging, the betrayals, the violence, and only you're doing it with Christ. And you're seeing him as a fellow victim, because a lot of people are like, where was God? How did this happen? Why did he let this? And they have all this anger at God, but it really shows that he knows this way. And it's very powerful. The way we do it is very powerful. I don't have time to get into it, but we use a lot of body work.
Yeah. So it's kind of an intersection of the psychological along with the spiritual.
All my programs are psychologically and spiritually integrated very seamlessly, I might add. And then the next program that I wrote, and this is a good story because it involves Rachel's Vineyard, but it's for soldiers. It's called Duty to Heal, Finding Peace for a Soldier's Heart. We also have included first responders and law enforcement because that's traumatic, even more so now. So that program is another week-long program that addresses the moral injury of soldiers. And we go through different living scripture exercises where they're designed to, in a once removed way, once removed because you're in a scene and Jesus is there, but to trigger memories. So they're written in a way and with music and everything. Sensory-based treatment means we have music and lights and candles and rituals and you're touching and feeling, which in itself keeps people grounded. Because most people can't go into trauma without dissociating or freezing.
Mm-hmm.
Having a panic attack, whatever it is. So we teach a lot of skills, a lot of psychoeducation in the beginning.
Hello, everybody. This is Richard Beatty with Crawford Media here in Denver. Colorado Community Church is the partner that we will send people to on Christian mental health professionals. If you are in need of counseling in different areas of expertise, these counselors have been screened and vetted by the church and offer therapy from a biblical worldview. I'm Richard Beatty. You're listening to Crawford Media in Denver.